This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Roger of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Looking at the map of Afghanistan, the neighboring countries are watching as the U.S. and NATO leave the country in terms of military commitment. And the Afghan National Army is fending off, for now, the Taliban offensive against the large provincial capitals such as Kandahar. However, there is the expectation that this can go very badly. So I go to an independent report from Afghanistan about how Moscow views the collapse of the Afghan National Army and the Kabul government's threatened Kabul government. This is Dateline Kabul. Moscow and Dushanbe, that's the capital of Tajikistan to the north, have conferred on joint measures to ward off threats from the Taliban to Tajikistan. TASS news agency reported that Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and his Tajik counterpart, Shirali Mirzo, discussed the situation in Afghan-Tajik border areas on Saturday. Minister Sergei Shoigu, promised that his country, Russia, would help Tajikistan build a new outpost on the border. The allies will hold military drills in August, forthcoming, the next weeks. Last I saw, there were reports of more than 6,000 Russian military personnel in Tajikistan. The foreign minister in Moscow was quoted as saying this: the parties discussed joint measures to neutralize threats related to the escalating situation in Afghanistan. Bill, we can't see into Moscow, but we know that they have a bad history with Afghanistan. They fought a war there for 10 years and left in despair. There are plenty of men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s in Moscow, missing limbs or with dark thoughts about their time in Afghanistan. How do you measure the Taliban? Is it in position to spread its poison into Central Asia, into the stands? Is Moscow well served to build a new outpost on the border?
Yeah, the Russians, you know, they certainly have a complicated relationship with the Taliban and obviously with Afghanistan, with its occupation there from up until 1989. The Russians supported the Taliban in a minor way, far, far less than that of Pakistan or to another degree, much less than the Iranians. But they've armed some Taliban groups along the border in the effort of spreading its influence. But now that the Taliban is taking control of much of the northern, the borders of Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan and Tajikistan specifically are directly threatened. These are all sort of Russian vassal states, if you will. They're concerned about what the Taliban is going to do. Now, the Taliban itself has a vested interest in not launching attacks and allowing its violence to spread across these borders. But the groups that are in the Taliban alliance or whatever you want to describe it, I think alliance is probably just fine. Turkestan Islamic Party, Islamic Movement, Uzbekistan. You know, I could go on and on with the name of Central Asian jihadist groups that currently fight alongside the Taliban in northern and Afghanistan and throughout the country. These groups are definitely eyeing across the border, and these are the ones you can't rely on the Taliban to keep its word to stop these groups from going across the border. And that's what Russia's concerned about. That's what Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, that's what they're all concerned about. All of their moves are purely defensive. You don't expect Tajikistan or Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan to launch airstrikes across the border or have incursions. It's going to be defensive. It's going to be lock down the borders. It's going to be more repression against dissidents and whatnot inside the country, you know, more surveillance of mosques and known agitators and, you know, going just against political dissidents, because that's what these countries do. They tend to not to use these types of crises to take control of any also legitimate domestic political opposition as well.
Al-Qaeda, ISIS. In a lengthy essay at Foreign Affairs magazine by the distinguished commentator Seth Jones, who's written about the war in Eurasia for many years, he identifies some of the problems that we can see now in these tormented remarks by Moscow, by Delhi, by Kabul, even by the Taliban spokesman saying, yeah, well, we'll share power as long as you remove Ghani and we can choose our own government. So these are tormented remarks. We can't be certain of their of their fate, but we can speculate about what Afghanistan will look like. And Al-Qaeda is part of that mix. Bill, we're not going to debate whether Al-Qaeda is president or not, because your page has long since made the very clear case. This and this and this. Al-Qaeda has never been far from the Taliban. They work closely together. The Haqqani network is the connection. What do we know now about Al-Qaeda's thinking about post-U.S., post-NATO? Do we have any sense? Have they given away their hand?
Al-Qaeda's been very quiet about this. Anything about Afghanistan that's come from Al-Qaeda has come from the affiliates. So Shabab has mentioned the Taliban victory in Afghanistan and how it's a boon for jihadists worldwide. Same thing with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb. But Al-Qaeda Central itself has been mum on this, and it's done so because it wants the Taliban to win. And if the Al-Qaeda comes out and advertises its presence inside of Afghanistan, then it gives the West reason to stay. So they played a very clever political game here in Afghanistan. It's definitely smart for them to keep quiet, but it doesn't mean they're not fighting in the ranks of the Taliban. And as a matter of fact, and this is just in the UN report, I noted this several months ago, which actually made it in the previous UN report, that Al-Qaeda, it has a magazine called Thabat, and it's actually advertising fighting alongside the Afghan Taliban. Previously, I think I counted it in 18 provinces within Afghanistan where Thabat was actually, and there's 34 provinces total, so more than half. This time around, when UN did the counting, it showed that Al-Qaeda was advertising its fighting in Afghanistan in 15. Now, what Westerners like to do is say, well, that's Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent. That's its subgroup. It's not the Al-Qaeda we need to worry about. But as you and your listeners know, after listening to Tom and I for years, that's not how all this work. These branches, these affiliates, however you want to describe them, they're all part of the Al-Qaeda network. They swap fighters and they take orders from on high, and they are executing Al-Qaeda's goal of reestablishing a global caliphate. That's what they want. That's what they're all fighting for, to discern between Al-Qaeda Central and Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent, which is Al-Qaeda's obviously branch in the Indian subcontinent. It's a mistake, but what this does is show how close the Taliban-Al-Qaeda relationship is and how much Al-Qaeda is supporting the Taliban's military operations.
All right,
the previous report from the – oh, go ahead.
Now, Seth Jones offers three options. You'll be able to finish your sentence with these three options. The first is drop everything. Just leave. That's the first option. That, of course, would have implications for Al-Qaeda. The second option is to provide money and equipment to these security forces, but to outsource military operations. And he suggests India or Pakistan. The third is what he says is called armed overwatch, providing air and covert forces. That looks to be the most attractive right now, according to Seth Jones. However, you're taking those three options. Does Al-Qaeda get ruled out at any of those options? One, drop everything. That sounds like it would bless Al-Qaeda. Two,
absolutely,
money and equipment and offload to India and Pakistan, if that's possible. What does that do up for Al-Qaeda? And three, armed overwatch. What does that do for Al-Qaeda? Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, the first option we don't even need to discuss. That's an Al-Qaeda victory with the Taliban. The second option, I mean, I can't believe Seth Jones would say, trust Pakistan to do this. I mean, let's just take the fox, put it in the hen house, and keep feeding it hens. Pakistan is the reason why this all happens. It's the prime supporter of the Taliban. Pakistan has no love for Al-Qaeda, but it has overlooked the Taliban's role in supporting and nurturing and keeping Al-Qaeda alive in Afghanistan and thriving. India can't – what we're expecting India to do, what we couldn't do. India doesn't have the resources to do this, and it will just inflame Pakistan's support anyway. The last option, this sort of armed overwatch, my understanding in reading his piece, he's talking about using it to strike at Al-Qaeda. But the problem in all of this, and this is what everyone seems to miss in Washington, our policymakers, when you ignore the close Taliban-Al-Qaeda ties, the fact that two are joined at the hip, and this was the point I was going to make before you began discussing Seth's point, Sirajuddin Haqqani, one of two deputy emirs of the Taliban and its most influential and powerful leader, the man responsible for this designing and executing this offensive, He was identified in the last UN report as a leader within Al-Qaeda. What does that make the Taliban? If Siraj Haqqani is both the Taliban's deputy mayor and a leader within Al-Qaeda, an influential leader within Al-Qaeda, how is just striking at Al-Qaeda going to make a difference if we're going to ignore the Taliban takeover? So this is the dilemma that, you know, a lot of people, I think the good idea fairy starts coming out for a lot of people and when they're making policy recommendations, but they really don't understand the realities on the ground in Afghanistan. They don't understand the intense, deep and enduring ties between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and how we can expect a lesser version of what we tried to work when the greater version of that failed.
I'm speaking to Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And he keeps the Long War Journal with his colleague, Tom Jocelyn, and their colleagues. We're discussing where we are right now in Afghanistan. Kandahar is besieged by the Taliban. This is a small version of the larger story of what is to be done. The U.S. is sending in airstrikes that may or may not have relieved some aspects of the siege. As I understand it, the airport is still under attack. The roads are not clearly open to Kandahar. Neighborhoods are being attacked. We've already given an illustration of one popular comedian being butchered, massacred, murdered in front of his neighbors because he at one time served in the Afghan police force. So what we're looking at here is a small scale of what we can expect when and if the Taliban takes over Kabul and other large cities. When we come back, we're going to explore Seth Jones' recommendations in detail, the military detail of what will work. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.